Everybody needs just the right amount of fuel to get going in the morning. For some, a nice McDonald's egg and cheese bagel is just enough to do it. Others might prefer a McDonald's bacon egg and cheese bagel. Or perhaps a sausage egg and cheese bagel. And there are those where nothing will do but a hearty McDonald's steak egg and cheese bagel. Four different breakfast bagels to get you going. Tomorrow morning, give your engine a head start at participating McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hi, I'm John Bearer, the host and lead researcher for Stories of Sacrifice, American POW-MIA podcast, and the U.S. POW-MIA Family Locating. A free forensic genealogy public service I provide to support POW-MIA families trying to get their loved one identified and brought home. First, I want to thank you, our listeners, for your interest in the Stories of Sacrifice podcast. Our goal with the podcast is to tell the world about the sacrifice these brave heroes gave for the freedoms we enjoy every day. They gave our country their last full measure. They give us their tomorrow for our freedom today. Second, we would like to raise public awareness that thousands of these heroes from World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and the Cold War have still not yet been found or returned to the United States, with many still buried as unknowns in our own national cemeteries. Their families still waiting for our government to disinter and identify them. So what can you do to support this important mission? First, if you are a relative of a missing in action service member, you can visit the Defense POW-MIA Accounting Agency website for more information about providing a family reference DNA sample. If you want more information, you can also contact me at john@uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Even if you're not related to an MIA, you can contact your members of Congress to request they allocate enough funding to support the POW-MIA mission and to change the DPAA policy to a DNA lead process and create additional public partnerships to disinter and process the remains for those that are buried as unknown. You can also help us in our mission by sharing these podcast stories with your friends, family, and consider sharing them on your own social media. We would also appreciate if you could leave us a review on your favorite podcast app. You can also visit www.storiesofsacrifice.org and leave us a review there. You can visit our affiliate links on our website where we will earn a small commission on your purchases at no extra cost to you. If you feel moved to do so, please visit our donation links on our website to help us continue this important mission. Just sharing these stories helps us greatly, and we cannot thank you enough for listening. Sit back and relax, and we hope you enjoy today's show. Welcome to Stories of Sacrifice, World War II American POW-MIAs in the Philippines. This is a production of the U.S. POW-MIA Family Locating. I'm your host and lead researcher, John Bear. Over 75,000 service members are still listed as missing in action from World War II. Of those, over 30,000 are currently listed as active pursuit by the Defense POW-MIA Accounting Agency. Active pursuit meaning they could possibly be identified with the proper family reference sample DNA being on file with the Armed Forces DNA Identification Laboratory at Dover Air Force Base in Delaware. The process of donating DNA reference material is easy, painless, and free of charge. If you are the relative of a missing service member, you can contact the Service Casualty Office of the MIA for information on how to provide a DNA sample. The Service Casualty Office will mail to your home a DNA donor kit that contains a donor consent form, instruction form, three cheek swabs, and a shipping envelope. All you have to do is fill out the paperwork, rub the inside of your cheek with the swabs, place the swabs back into the containers, and affix the label. The collected samples are then placed in a pre-addressed and prepaid envelope and then mailed to the Armed Forces DNA Identification Lab at Dover. That's it. It's a completely painless process. To get more information about your missing in action relative, you can visit our website, uspowmiafamilylocating.com, and we can help you to determine if your relative is currently listed on the DPAA active pursuit list and the next steps to help get them identified. Just visit our website or email john@uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Today we are talking with the family of Seaman First Class Buren R. O'Kane, who joined the U.S. Navy from California and was a member of Patrol Bombing Squadron 106. He was an aerial gunner aboard a privateer when it went down on June 1, 1945. His remains have not been recovered or identified following the war, and he is still unaccounted for. Seaman First Class O'Kane is memorialized on the Walls of the Missing at the Manila American Cemetery in the Philippines. I would like to welcome Jeff O'Kane, who is the great-nephew of Seaman First Class O'Kane, to the podcast. Hi, Jeff. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Thank you for having me on.
So what can you tell me about your great-uncle's missing in action status? When did you find out, and what is your family's efforts been to find out more information about it?
Well, I've heard about it all my life. His brothers were always interested in just knowing what happened to Buren. My dad actually sent out in the late 90s to actually try to tell that story of what happened to him that day. That was our main focus back then. And he traveled to the Philippines and Singapore, running down information. And his search culminated in 2002 with meeting one of the gunners aboard the recon plane that flew with him that day, Mr. Victor J. Walters. And he shared his story of what happened that day as he was a witness. And five of the pictures from the recon camera that were taken on the recon mission over Singapore.
And so when you kind of heard about it, or when you really took a great notice in this, what were your steps? What have you done so far to really push this effort with the government to get the crash site identified or crash site located and identified and get him recovered?
Well, we actually found by accident, with the help of some volunteers, actually found the declassified reports from the mission of June 1st, 1945, that remained classified until December 31st, 2012.
Wow, that's crazy. Being classified that long.
Yeah, it was pretty surprising for us. We had finally, heard the story through my dad's mission. Never did we think we would be able to locate the plane, but with the pictures that were, the 29 photos that were in the declassified report, we were actually able to pinpoint the crash landing of the PB4Y2 in the Pacific and work out an actual possible location 74 years later. And we've worked with several groups like Project Recover and Pacific Rex, just trying to find someone who's able to actually go and look for it. We've tried contacting with DPAA and have notified them of our location. And we just sit and wait for someone who's able to actually go look or actually able to do something.
Now, why hasn't the government tried to put together, why hasn't the DPAA put together a mission and actually went out and tried to do some mini pre-surveys or locate the wreck?
Well, currently we're told the crash location is not in Singapore. It's actually in Indonesia. And DPAA reports that they have no ability to enter Indonesia to actually look for the plane. But they say that they're hopeful that soon they'll be able to access Indonesia and possibly look for the plane someday.
Oh, okay. What kind of plane was it again?
It's a it's a PB4Y2. I believe it's a B-24 remodeled by the Navy.
And what did
PB4Y2 privateer?
Yeah, and what did they remodel it for? Can you talk a little bit about what the purpose of the plane was and what their mission was?
As far as I know, and I'm not a historian, but as far as I know, they were anti-shipping over in the Pacific, and patrol, obviously, fleet screening for the fleets. I don't know a lot about the remodeling of the plane. Other than they did take out the belly gun, and I think they took the turbochargers off because most of their stuff would be low level.
Right, and so the purpose of taking the belly gun off was probably to install a camera to do a lot of reconnaissance.
I don't know anything on that.
Wasn't that the mission that they were on that day, was to do some photo reconnaissance or something of?
They were doing a photo reconnaissance flight of Singapore. They were looking for two heavy cruisers that had fled a battle. I believe the Battle of the Coral Sea, and they had been trying to find where these heavy cruisers had gone. I think about 7 days prior, Lieutenant Commander Goodlow actually did a recon flight of the area and found the two heavy cruisers in the Johor Strait behind Singapore. And then they continued to send flights to make sure they stayed there or to catch when they moved. I believe they were preparing for the invasion of Borneo. And so the location of those heavy cruisers was a top priority.
Oh, okay, okay, okay. Well, what can you tell me about the mission that day where that your uncle didn't return from?
Well, it was a two-plane recon mission, a photo reconnaissance of Singapore. The VPB-111 plane carried the camera. My uncle's plane had the newest PB-4Y2, the upgraded B-24s, and it was sent to cover the plane with a camera. They were there just for protection. Turned out they were the ones that actually got hit and went down.
Okay, and so that other plane that was with them, they actually made it back to base.
Yeah, that was VPB-111 flown by Lieutenant Heiler. They were in a PB-4Y-1 with they had a crew of 13 on that day.
In your uncle's plane, how many was on his?
12. They had 12 on my uncle's plane, and when flown by Lieutenant Commander Howard F. Mears.
In that era, nobody survived that crash, isn't that correct?
Yes, Reed. All 12 men remain MIA to this day.
Yeah, but that other aircraft that was with them, they were able to circle the crash site area for a little bit, isn't that correct?
I don't believe so. There's a little conflict in the reports. What I've gotten directly from the two gunners that I've met is that when the plane hit the water, they had to get out of there. They had 13 to 18 fighters after them. They saw the plane hit. There was nothing more they could do, and they had to get out of there. They still had to fight their way out of Singapore and spend another, I think, approximately 30 minutes trying to fight their way back out.
Oh, wow, that's crazy. Yeah, but at least they were able to see the crash, I'm just going to play you've been very proactive in this case. I know we'll kind of discuss it here a little bit later about how you've actually researched all these the crew members of your great uncle's aircraft, and you've researched all of them and were able to find a bunch of these family members and actually request that they provide a DNA sample. And then also you've been proactive and found the crew of that other, the surviving members of that crew of the other aircraft that actually witnessed the crash, and you went out and interviewed them. And I want to go ahead and play a little snippet of Victor Walters. I'm going to let, just a small snippet of it and just have you talk a little bit more about it.
Okay.
Let's see. And then we went over Singapore, and we were attacked by...
Can you hear that okay?
Oscars.
Yes, sir.
And Oscar was a plane that they had around Singapore, and they were not that effective, really. because they only had two machine guns, one in each wing. So anyway, after we went out, come out of Singapore, the two planes were flying side by side, and we went up to this airfield at the Malayan coast. And I don't know how far away it was from Singapore. I say 15 to 30 miles. You may have heard something different. I don't really know. But anyway, we were flying at 11,000 feet, and the Japanese planes took off. And I mean, we have a picture somewhere. There was four of them taking off side by side on the runway at the same time. So they came up, and they were milling around, and they're milling around. And then all of a sudden, one of them, who apparently was the training officer or something, the only one that was completely trained, so he goes ahead of us, and he's flying maybe 50 or 100 miles an hour faster than we were. So I could see him going up on the left-hand side, up ahead of us, and then all of a sudden, he's making a turn to the right. And so I looked, and he's coming in toward us. And he had some later planes than what they had in Singapore. So I could see two guns firing out of each wing. And it looked like he was coming right toward us. And I said to myself, you know, he's only got four machine guns, and between the two of us, we've got 10, and he doesn't have a chance. But I was totally wrong, because he wasn't coming toward us. We were flying side by side. We were on the right, and he was on the left. The other plane comes in. I could see him coming right in. So and it looked like I could see him coming in toward the other plane. So I looked, and the other plane goes past us, and he climbs out and so forth, but he wasn't on fire or anything. So I looked back at the plane your uncle was in, and it was completely on fire, all over. So what had happened was when the other plane came in, he hit the number three engine right near the carburetor, right with the gas was under pressure coming into the carburetor, so all the gas was going out, and it was going all over the plane. So when we looked back at the other plane, we couldn't even see it. It was totally covered with on flame.
So he's talking there about how the Japanese had come in and they ended up shooting that number three engine and the plane going down there. What were your thoughts when you were interviewing him?
Oh, it was just amazing that Mr. Walters at 95, that I was able to meet him, number one, but that he was still had such a vivid recollection of this day. I was very honored to be able to go and meet him and for him to tell the story that day.
Yeah, no kidding. That's amazing in itself that he was still living and was able to give a firsthand account of what happened.
Yeah, and another part of the story is that my uncle's plane didn't go down immediately. They flew for another 30 minutes with that engine and wing on fire, constantly losing altitude. They had started in at 11,000 feet, and when they got hit, they were trying to get the fire out. They were urged to bail out of the plane, but what I heard is that they were pretty afraid of being captured by the Japanese. They were known to execute, and that they stayed with the plane and try to preserve it, trying to get the fire out so they could possibly fly back with three engines. And the greatest part of the whole story, I think, is Victor Walters' crew, flown by Lieutenant Heiler, made the decision to stay with them instead of just continuing back to base with their recon photos. That they stayed with my uncle's crew from 11,000 feet down to 1,000, all the way until they attempted to make their water landing in near the Singapore Harbor and ultimately crashed. But it was just, I've always thought it was very amazing that these guys stayed with them to keep the Japanese fighters off of them. You know, could have been very detrimental for them, but the fact that they wouldn't let them go alone. So I was very honored to be able to meet him and actually thank him for the way they stuck with that crew that day.
Yeah, no kidding. It was their last chance, that's for darn sure. Going back to your great uncle's crew, in your search for the families, what steps have you taken to, you know, what process did you go through to get these other families identified?
Well, it was a lot of networking actually with other families of missing members. I spoke with some very interesting people that have helped us out quite a bit. I was put in touch with a man named Mark Chittachimo, who actually helped us run down current family members of the 11 men aboard my plane, or my uncle's plane. His work has resulted in us being able to contact...
Grand Canyon University, a Christian university, is one of the largest and fastest growing universities in the country, offering over 200 engaging programs online. GCU invests in high demand areas such as nursing, teaching, and the sciences. Students engage with faculty who become partners in your success. GCU's online students received over $100 million in scholarships in 2020. Visit gcu.edu/myoffer to see the scholarships you qualify for.
Eight out of the 11 other men aboard with contacts directly related to them. Two daughters of the men aboard. The daughter of Howard F. Mears, we were able to contact her. And then the daughter of Blanton, yeah, Roy Blanton Jr. I believe she's 90 now. And so it's just been a very incredible mission. We've met a couple of nephews, people that are named after the men, just using the internet, calling numbers that we were provided with, and even using Facebook Messenger to find a couple of the families.
Yeah, that's kind of the stuff that I do too. So who helped you? I mean, did you use a genealogist or did you just, you know, kind of go at it on your own to try to get these phone numbers and stuff for these descendants?
No, at the start, it was Mark Chittachimo. I believe he's a genealogist, but he helped us out with something to start with. And then we've ended up going into Facebook and Facebook Messenger trying to run some down.
Oh, okay. That's right. Now you went through this process of getting most of these families. So you have Commander Mears' daughter. No, Commander Mears was the pilot.
Yes, sir.
Have you ran into any issues with the family really not wanting to be supportive of the effort, or are they feeling some of these people that you've contacted, do they think it's a scam or you know?
Yeah, I run into a lot of problems at first with people think that I'm running some sort of scam, but we've been able to at least articulate what we're trying to do with them. And one of the major things is we're not asking for any money. And usually once we've sent them the research paper we have that we've worked out for the location of the plane, most questions of all that typically end.
Yeah, and when this first started for your family, before you did all the research, he was listed just as missing in action. He wasn't even actually on the active pursuit list by the Defense POWMIA County Agency. But through your efforts putting that research together, you actually got him put on the active pursuit list. Isn't that correct?
Yes, sir. Yeah, it's been, and I want to make sure that I explain this very clearly. This isn't all my doing. This is my entire family. My aunts, uncles, second cousins. I mean, it's been everybody pulling together for this research. My uncle Stephen has spent so much time putting the research paper together that it's just amazing what he was able to do.
Yeah, it was definitely. What was the reaction from the DPAA when you sent that, when your family sent that information into them?
It was, I don't know. We were met with a little bit of skepticism at the start. I don't think it's every day that a family member comes telling them they know where, you know, their family member was lost 74 years ago. But through some repeated contact with them, let them know that we were not going to give up on this. I think we finally proved our case to them and got them to start looking at the things that we were presenting, because they are very clear of where the location of the plane is. In the recon photos, there's an island captured in the recon photo that can be found on Google Earth today. We know where the plane went down. The biggest question we want to answer is it still there? And if it is, we really want someone to see if they can try to recover the remains and bring these men home.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I'm sure, you know, once you sent that research into them, I'm sure that they assigned one of their historian or researchers to it, and they probably just went through the same steps that you guys did to verify it. And I'm sure that your research was, well, it definitely was solid enough that they actually put him on the active pursuit list, which is amazing.
Yeah, we were very pleased and surprised.
And then now you've reached out, you said earlier, you had reached out to a couple other, they're actually nonprofit groups that help in the, you know, in searching for these crash sites, both terrestrial and in water. And it sounds like they've done a little bit to support you.
Yeah, we've been in contact with, we started, you know, with Project Recover at the very start of this, and they were really supportive of what we had found. We had already been in contact with them before we had found the declassified report, running down some of the information that we had. And then once the declassified report was found, yeah, they were supportive of that, and are trying to at some point get into Indonesia and are seeking permission from the Indonesian government. And then Pacific Rex, we've been in contact with Justin Talen, just trying to find anyone that can make access to Indonesia and actually look for this plane.
Yeah, I see that Pacific Rex has a great write-up on the history of the whole mission and the outcome, of course.
Yeah, they've been really great over there also. Both of them are great organizations. We're really very appreciative to have been in contact and supported by both of them.
Yeah, has either one been able to get any headway with the foreign government on getting in to try to locate?
Not that I've heard. Okay. Not from DPAA or anyone else.
Yeah.
So yeah, Indonesia seems to be it. Well, I don't want to make any comments on Indonesia.
Well, you know, they should be a little more supportive, that's for sure.
I wish they were, but yeah, I don't want to make any comment about them.
Right.
Any negative comments.
Right. Sorry. Yeah, that's okay. How many, we'll get into a little bit here of the other families that are MIA. So how many families have given DNA or family reference samples? Do you have that information?
You know, I don't. We've talked with the families, and I know of possibly two that have, with a couple more that were saying they were going to contact. So yeah, it's kind of fuzzy. We've been giving the information to the families, and like I said, we receive some of them are very interested in it, and others not so much. So we kind of get a varying degree of interest. I'm sure this sounds like a pretty crazy story to a lot of people. Yeah, possibly two other families. I know definitely that two other families have contacted their local congressman. So we definitely have support out of the family out of Georgia and then also Colorado.
And you've also talked with your congressional representatives, isn't that correct?
Yes, yeah. We've been in touch with Kevin McCarthy's office. here in Bakersfield, California. They've been very helpful with us also.
Oh, that's good. That's good. So what are your next steps? I know you attended a DPAA family meeting that's put on yearly by the DPAA, and I know you're planning on attending the next one in Las Vegas, I think. What kind of information, when you attend those DPAA family events, what kind of information do they give you?
It's a wide variety of information. They have DNA testing on site. They talk about their overall scope and what they do. It's absolutely an amazing event to go to. And then later, they pull us off for a one-on-one meeting, which, you know, at the start of this, they didn't have a lot of information. We were the ones actually supplying a lot of the information. We delivered our research paper February 23rd, 2019 at the San Jose DPAA family event.
What was their reaction when you turned that over to them? I mean, you were probably in, you know, I know they have a deal online where anybody can watch on Facebook Live and then you get the opportunity to have a one-on-one meeting with a case researcher. I'm sure that's where you turned it over to them. What was their reaction when you handed it to them?
Well, they didn't react much. They just took the information and said they would follow up on it. They seemed a little surprised, which I'm sure it's not a normal occurrence for them. But we gave a copy to the Navy Service Casualty Officer, Melissa Martin. She was attending also. There just wasn't a whole bunch of information for them to. I don't think they've had a lot of time to research this.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Other than they were attempting to access Indonesia.
Yeah, I'm sure it took them a little bit to digest all the information there.
Yeah, there was a lot. That's one thing about my Uncle Stephen's research is that he doesn't leave much to the imagination.
So what are the next steps? What are your next steps on this whole situation? What are your plans? And I know you're going to the next DPAA event there in Vegas. What are your plans for that?
Well, my brother and I are going to attend. We just want to go back and number one, mainly let them know that the O'Kane family is definitely not forgetting about this. We're coming to let them know that, you know, we're definitely always going to support this mission until it's concluded. See if there's any update on any information. Any progress. Other than that, I don't know. It's a big waiting game, waiting for someone to be able to get access to actually check our coordinates.
Yeah. I wish the State Department would get a little more heavily involved in these.
Yeah, we just want to. My main goal is for my father to see. God. Yeah, that's going to be hard for me to talk about.
That's all right, man. Go ahead.
My main goal is for my father to see, you know, what his research started. I definitely want my dad to see that plane, if it's still there. And if he's able to see that, that'll be one of my main missions, both my father and my grandmother. And then if possible, someday if we can, that the U.S. government, DPA, can get permission to enter Indonesia, if it can be found, to try and recover the men. That'll be stage two.
Yeah. And your grandmother, now she's the sister?
No, she would be the sister-in-law.
Right.
My grandmother grew up, she was born across the street from the O'Kane family. So she grew up with Buren and all his brothers, later marrying my grandfather, Dwayne. And so she's known Buren all her life. And is the only person left in my family that actually knew Buren directly.
Right. And that's the thing about this case is there's still children of these men still living. And they don't have much more time, to actually see this happen, you know, to see their father come home. or their loved one, you know. And it's, you know, that's the longer we wait, the, you know, the more that these families are removed. And
I know. And it, you know, this started out on as just you know, a search for our family member. You know, my long lost great uncle. As I've met these families, I mean, the daughters and the nephews, and it's just turned into such a mission of trying to get this done for everyone. I've met so many incredible people along the way. You know, meeting the two gunners, 95 and 93 years old. I mean, that's something that, you know, I'm sure they would love to see this resolved. And, but I, you know, I don't know how much more time they have, and I don't know how to make this go any faster, but if I could find a way, I would do it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully one of these, the DPAA is able to get a mission in there, or one of these other nonprofit groups that deal with this, that they're able to get some agreements in place where they can at least, you know, do a survey of the site and show that there's a real possibility of a recovery, which it sounds like there is. I mean, this is from what I've seen.
I think that would bring a lot of closure to the families too. I know it doesn't sound like a lot, but just if the plane's still there, to just show them that it's no longer an unknown.
Yeah, exactly. That they're there and there's, you know, they're still on this earth. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and talking about your great uncle's case, and hopefully I'd love to get you on again especially after your next meeting in San Jose with the DPAA, and kind of see if there's any updates.
Yeah, this last year was San Jose. This year will be Las Vegas.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
I'm all into when they are.
Yep. Oh, no. I hope some of these other families attend theirs. You know, the DPAA holds these family events all over the country at different times throughout the year. Hopefully some of these other families can attend too, and really, really show the interest and really put the pressure, you know, that we really need to get in there and really need to find these men.
Yeah, I hope that they do. And for their own benefit, they're pretty, they're great meetings. I mean, they are just jam packed with information of their current operations and what they plan. It was very interesting to attend the first one, and we've urged all the families that if they have one in their area to definitely sign up and go.
Yeah, definitely.
And donate their DNA.
exactly. You know, that's, we need to get a program, you know, going to, you know, the government needs to get a program to actually pursue the family reference samples for these World War II MIAs. I mean, you look at the other all wars together, you know, the Vietnam and Korea, they've got, you know, well over 90% family reference samples on file for those that are missing. But in World War II, it's under 8%.
Yeah, and it's probably just so unknown for them, not knowing that this is out there and not knowing that this is possible.
Exactly. And, there hasn't been
trying to get that information out to them. I don't know how you do it other than what we're doing, sending emails constantly.
Yeah, exactly. Sending emails and trying to make everybody aware. And I think our government needs to step up to the plate here and do a little bit more, in my opinion. But that's just my opinion. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to it? Anything that I might have forgotten to ask, or anything that you want others to know?
I think we've pretty much covered everything we had. Yeah, I can't think of anything offhand that you missed. I mean, we've pretty well covered the whole deal.
If there's a family that might be listening to this podcast that hasn't started the process yet, what is your recommendations to them?
It's actually really easy. If you go onto the DPA website, they actually have the service casualty officers for the different services, whichever one your family member was into. They have email contact, phone contact, whatever you want to do to contact them. It's a 10-minute phone call, and they can have DNA samples at your house at no cost in a 10-minute phone call. It's pretty easy to accomplish.
Yeah, it really is, and that'll get the process, definitely get the process started, and they'll actually put together a case record for them, and then comes the long wait.
The long wait, yes.
Well, Jeff, I really appreciate you coming on and telling us your uncle's story, your great uncle's story, and for your family's sake, I hope something happens real soon.
Thank you very much, sir. So do we.
Thank you for listening to Stories of Sacrifice, World War II, American, POW, MIAs in the Philippines. This has been a production of the U.S. POW, MIA Family Locating. You can find us on the web at uspowmiafamilylocating.com. Opinions expressed in this podcast are our own and given in the best intention. Overall, the POWMIA accounting community is doing what it can with limited resources. It is our hope additional federal funding will be provided, along with additional partnerships established to disinter and process the remains of our unknowns located in the national cemeteries. You can help by contacting your congressional representatives and asking that they implement a DNA lead policy for those unknown POW/MIAs. Thank you for listening.
You know when you order a new video game, or a golf club, or a blender, and then it arrives at your door, you get a little thrill. Imagine how much more thrilling it is when you order a new car. With Nissan at Home, you can shop for the perfect ride and order it without ever having to go anywhere. Sure beats a golf club or a blender. Buy a new car entirely online with Nissan at Home. Deliver direct from dealer to driveway. Thrill starts here. Services may vary at participating dealers, subject to applicable law. See dealer for details.
I haven't really woken up until I've had my McDonald's breakfast deal. And I know this is true because before breakfast, I put my phone in the refrigerator and couldn't find the keys that were already in my hand.
Nothing gets the morning going like the first sip of an iced coffee. Get any size and any flavor for 99 cents until 11 a.m. Price and participation may vary.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba. McDonald's. I'm loving it.